Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we have one of the biggest UFC pay-per-views I've seen in a while, quite potentially a perfect main card. I think even if we lose a fight or two, we would still be able to recuperate with some of these great prelims we have. This is your official UFC 311 preview and predictions podcast as well. We will be talking about the NFL divisional round. We got four more games in the NFL playoffs before the two conference championships, and that's eventually the Super Bowl. Do I care at all, really, now that the Vikings are eliminated? Not really. I'm going to be honest, my caring levels are kind of at zero, but nonetheless, I'll probably watch them as I'll be watching UFC. We also have a lot of new UFC fights to talk about, new things in pop culture. We got a lot of fun stuff for everyone on today's episode, and we're not going to waste any time. We're going to get right on into it as we have so much UFC new news. I mean, there have just been so many fights that have been announced over the last few days, and I just kind of want to start with the fact that we haven't covered, I think, a new UFC event in about a week. It's been about a week, and I haven't done... Actually, last time I spoke, I didn't talk about new UFC fights. I think that's what I was troubling myself with. So there have been some new events, or new fights, that I should better put it as, that have been announced. First off, the UFC Seattle main event between Song Yadong and Henry Cejudo, the number 7 and number 8 bantamweights in the world. Song Yadong coming off his tough defeat against Piotr Jan. That was a competitive fight, though. And as for Henry Cejudo, coming off of his tough loss against Merab Dvevashvili, those two will do battle in the UFC Seattle main event. In the co-main event, you have Rob Font, the number 9 ranked bantamweight, having one last fight. Actually, he's not having the one last fight. His opponent is, that is against Dominic Cruz. Dominic Cruz, former men's bantamweight champion, double champion. Actually, fun fact, won it multiple times. He also won belts in the WEC, Total Combat FW, Total Combat LW. I mean, this dude has had a historic UFC career, Hall of Famer guaranteed. You'll hear him on the booth, and he's having his final UFC fight against Rob Font. That'll be a tough fight for Dominic Cruz, I'm going to be honest. You know, I compare his last few performances against the ones we've seen in the past, and obviously he's past his prime. You know, he's just gotten up there in age. And Rob Font, he hasn't had the best of luck lately, but I think if this is going to be a straight-up boxing match, I'm probably going to give this one to Rob Font. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm excited for this one. This should be pretty good. Another one for you, the UFC Vegas 102 event going down February 15th. Angela Hill, the number 13th ranked women's strawweight, back in action against the 15-4 Ketlin Souza. Ketlin Souza beating Yasmin Jeraguay and Marta McMahon in her two UFC wins so far. Has been very impressive. And now they're throwing her at the rankings against someone in Angela Hill who is the ultimate gatekeeper. Okay, you know, we talk about the Neil Magnys. We talk about the... Who's another good one? Volkan Ozdemir is a good gatekeeper. I'll say Kevin Holland occasionally. Derek Lewis for sure. But most definitely, Angela Hill is probably the biggest female gatekeeper we've seen of all time. So we'll see if I'm going to pick Ketlin Souza for that. We still have a while before that event takes place. We've had a bunch of other ones. Here are some names that you may recognize. Going down at UFC 312 in Sydney, Australia, Jake Matthews, longtime welterweight, takes on Francisco Prado. Francisco, 12-2 professionally. He's 1-2 in the UFC. His lone win is over Ottoman Azatir, a nasty knockout. I'll add that. He's also had a fight of the night, but looking for his finally get some momentum in the UFC. The Argentinian takes on the Australian Jake the Celtic Hig Matthews. And Jake, I mean, he's beaten Li Jing Liang, Phil Rowe, Diego Sanchez. He's beaten a lot of tough guys in the UFC, and you'll probably recognize him if you didn't. You've probably seen this man before. Some ranked flyweight action as well for UFC Vegas 103 going down March 1st as the number 8 ranked flyweight Asu Almabayev, 21-2 professionally, 4-0 in the UFC, none bigger than his win over Matthias Nicolau last time out, takes on the number 9 ranked Steve Ursig. Steve Ursig, I'm hoping, doesn't fall into the Dominic Reyes territory of just about beats the champ in a close decision, gets knocked out the next time around, and gets finished again in his next fight. So this will be tough for Steve, as Asu is a tough grappler. But man, Steve hits hard. Steve hits hard. I mean, that Matt Schnell knockout is a testament to that. That should be an exciting fight. I don't know if it's the main event. I don't believe it is. I think they're trying to load up that card a bit more. But we'll have to see. Should be an exciting showcase. Some more fun action here in the men's bantamweight division. This one going down at UFC Seattle as Ricky Simone, the 13-fight UFC veteran, takes on Javed Basharat. Javed is 14-1 and most recently suffered his first professional defeat, but he was able to bounce back with a win. He's 3-1 with a draw. Actually, I think it's a no contest in the UFC. I don't know. This is tough because Ricky can grapple. Javed can grapple. I think it's who's ever can get the better of each other in the striking department is going to get the better of this fight. Here's one I'm super excited for. UFC Vegas 105 going down April 5th. That's right. They already got 105 booked on April 5th. The number 12 ranked featherweight, Giga Chikadze, back in action as he takes on the 13-2 from Uganda, David Onama. I'm a huge David Onama fan. Okay, I gotta be honest. The Gabriel Santos knockout. Oh my gosh. The Jonathan Pierce finish. Oh my gosh. The Garrett Armfield submission. I mean, are you kidding me? David Onama hits like a truck. And I mean, his fight with Nate Landwehr, one of my favorite fights I've ever watched in the UFC, okay? This guy, 5-2 in the UFC, super talented. I'm so glad he's getting a shot at the rankings. And this is a perfect fight for both of these fighters. You know, Giga Chikadze is 7-2. Those losses, you know, they're to, oh my gosh, Calvin Kattar and Arnold Allen. And obviously, he's beaten Edson Barboza, Alex Caceres, Cub Swanson. But since the Caceres win, you know, he hasn't really materialized anything of momentum. So if he can knock off a guy in David Onama, Giga Chikadze will be right back in the mix. This should be a great striking affair. Here's another one for you guys. Just so many bangers left, right, and center. UFC London going down March 22nd has its main event as the former men's welterweight champion, the number one ranked welterweight in the world, Leon Rocky Edwards, 14-3 in the UFC, 22-4 professionally, takes on the number four ranked Jack Della Maddalena, 7-0 in the UFC, 17-2 professionally on a 17-fight win streak. And mind you, I believe they're all by finish. I would have to verify that, but I know a majority of his wins are by, or actually, no, he has had some decisions. I think a majority of his wins are by finish, though, as I can recall the Kevin Holland fight went the distance. But Jack Della Maddalena is an absolute killer. I mean, he beat Kevin Holland, beat Randy Brown, and most recently a comeback of the year win against Gilbert Burns in 2024. Jack Della Maddalena is ready to take over, and the winner of this will probably be put into a title shot, most likely. A couple of, you know, low-key ones, nothing too notable. I'd say those are the biggest ones. Personally, you know, there's a rumor, I think it's about confirmed, that the UFC Mexico main event at the end of either March or February, it is, you'll have Yair Rodriguez take on Diego Lopez, which I don't know what's going on there. I thought Diego Lopez was going to either get a title shot, take on Volkanovski, take on Moldovar Evlov for a title shot, but no, they're having him fight Yair. I don't know why we're gifting Yair with another main event, and I'm not trying to be a hater on Yair Rodriguez. You know, I know that's what it's going to sound like. He is number five featherweight in the world, but I mean, in that Brian Ortega fight, he had zero grappling ability, none whatsoever, and I think that's going to prove to be a disadvantage, especially for him if he takes on someone in Diego Lopez. So we'll see if he can bounce back from that. But other than that, you know, in terms of UFC news, Dana White said Conor McGregor will not be fighting until potentially the fall, which does not give, I think, anyone hope. I think we're all just kind of writing off Conor McGregor ever returning to the UFC, which is very unfortunate. But hey, it happens. And last one, here's a fun one that's being prepared, you could say, for March at UFC 313. Justin Gaethje and Dan Hooker. I really hope that materializes. March 8th, going down in Las Vegas. I mean, holy cow, if that actually transpires, that would be one of, if not the biggest fights that the UFC could potentially put on. I might be in Las Vegas for that event. I don't know. We'll have to see. I'm hoping that my dad could maybe go to a UFC event with me. We might be going to Las Vegas. We'll have to see. But if so, and there's a UFC event, I will have to go. But also in April, I want to go watch a WWE Raw in Minneapolis, Minnesota, because John Cena might be there. There are so many fun things to talk about in terms of anything. We'll just leave that all there. That's all the new UFC news that you guys need to know about. But there's also something else we talked about here on the podcast, and that is top 10 new things, top 10 new updates, top 10 headlines, whatever you want to call it, in pop culture, courtesy of Discussing film. I like to use the word updates. That's what I kind of think it is more so. But yes, that's what we're going to be going with. So let's get right on into it. Starting at number one, some unfortunate news is David Lynch has unfortunately passed away today at the age of 78. I know he was in a lot of notable movies. He was a director, wrote a lot of screenplays. So it's unfortunate. Unfortunate news to hear. Steven Spielberg shared a tribute to him, which was very nice. So sad to hear. I'm sure I recognize some of the work that he's done. But, you know, he passes away 78 years on the earth. I hope he lived a fulfilled life. And I can only hope that I live 78 years. That'd be incredible. That would truly be incredible if I lived that long. I'd be very happy if I did. Coming in at number two, a new poster for the final season of You is finally out. And apparently there's a trailer. I'm going to have to bookmark this trailer and go watch it. It's about a minute long. Joe Goldberg back. I don't know if I want to binge all the other seasons. Aren't they like 10 episodes? But one of my favorite series that I've seen, a lot of plot twists, a lot of things that somehow make sense. You know, it's kind of like rooting for Dexter in Dexter. That's what Joe Goldberg is, except Joe Goldberg is actually way more sadistic than Dexter is. A great show, You, season 6 or 5, whatever it is, comes out later this year. Checking in at number three, the whoever makes it, Nintendo, that is just revealed they're announcing a new Nintendo Switch 2 that is coming out soon. They revealed the design, which looks eerily similar to the Nintendo Switch 1, if you want to call it that. Never really played it. Not really a hater of it, but just not the type of games that I usually play are on the Nintendo, or those, whatever you want to call them, Mario games. I don't really dabble in that, but hey, I don't hate on you if you do. And number four, James Mangold says his Swamp Thing movie will be a simple gothic horror movie. While I'm sure DC views Swamp Thing as a franchise, I would be viewing it as a very simple, clean gothic horror movie. You know, I kind of like that. Not everything needs to be a cinematic universe. And if that's what you're going to do, James Mangold, to make the Swamp Thing successful, I'm here for it. And plus, swamps, scary, I'm in for it. And, you know, I'll probably watch it at home, not really go to the theater. But hey, you know what? Maybe it'll be entertaining. And number five, James Cameron says brave choices will be taken with the story for Avatar: Fire and Ash. If you're not making brave choices, he says, you're wasting everybody's time and money. You've got to break the mold every effing time. And honestly, I like that, James. I don't like to go into a movie guessing and expecting an outcome. You know, the past Avatar movie, who'd have guessed that a character they introduced would die later in the film? And honestly, caught me a bit off guard. The Avatar movies take a lot of work to produce. I mean, that second one, utterly insane how realistic it looks. And Fire and Ash is probably going to be just as spectacular. James Cameron, I have trust in you for this movie franchise, which is funny because we're just talking about how not every movie needs a franchise. You honestly probably didn't need an Avatar franchise, but it's too late. Too late, you already have franchises for that. And number six, a new Gremlins and Goonies movie are in the works at Warner Bros. They just can't come up with anything original. Can they? We gotta make a Gremlins remake, we gotta make a Goonies remake, and Goonies does not need a remake. Let me tell you that. I haven't really watched Gremlins. I think I've seen it maybe once. But let me just tell you, you do not need another Goonies. That first one is perfect. I hope they don't butcher it by adding unnecessary things into this new one they're making. And number seven, the first trailer for Daredevil Born Again came out today, showcasing a lot of new, whatever you want to call it, characters. I've never watched Daredevil personally. I've seen him in Spider-Man No Way Home. But that's about it. So we'll have to see if it's good at all. Maybe I'll watch it. I don't really know. And number seven, you now have a new look at the Wind Clan tribe in Avatar: Fire and Ash. They are nomadic and travel through the air. This movie, of course, comes out in December. And what I'm looking at is almost like, I don't even know what to call these, like blimps, like hot air balloons. I don't know. It's trippy. It's weird. James Cameron has created a whole new planet, and he's taken us back to it. And number seven, oh my gosh, a first look at Kong and Mechagodzilla in Fortnite, which recently came out. It's just about as absurd as ever. I don't play Fortnite anymore. I honestly don't. I am wrapping up God of War Ragnarok on PlayStation, and then I'm probably going to take a break from gaming, going to try and lock in the real world. So, but yeah, Fortnite. If you like Fortnite, you got Kong and Mechagodzilla skins you can play with. So, fun stuff there, because it really helps you out. Number nine, what's something fun here? There's got to be some other ones. They had a lot of BAFTA nominees. I don't even know what BAFTA means. Is that the good one or the bad one? I really can't recall. The Last of Us Season 1 is being released in the new limited edition 4K steelbook. Well, that's not very notable. Number 9, or something fun, you know. Honestly, they've just been giving out some boring stuff. Left, right, and center. Farron Tahir will reprise his role from Iron Man in the new Vision series for Disney+. He played a villain in the original Iron Man movie. And number 10, Captain America Brave New World will release in theaters in 1 month. Will I see it, you may ask? Probably gonna go with no, honestly, unless Lexi drags me there. But I could probably do without seeing another Marvel movie. The Marvel universe has completely lost me. It's been so long since I've last seen a movie. And honestly, they tried too hard to make so many movies. So maybe they can redeem themselves. We'll have to see. But I'll tell you who I'm hoping can redeem themselves. And that is all the playoff teams in the NFL. I hope they can redeem how boring and blowout games they had in the wild card round. I'm hoping all our divisional round games are competitive. Here are the four games we will be getting. And here are my predictions for each game. Kicking off the divisional round of football, we have the Texans visiting the Chiefs, and I hate to say it, I truly do, but it's got to be the Chiefs all day, and the Texans played pretty good over the Chargers. I mean, 32-12, they didn't give them an inch of confidence in that game. But another thing I do want to observe with this Texans team is that, you know, they lost to the Ravens on Christmas Day 31-2. Before that, they actually played the Chiefs December 21st in Kansas City. In that game, they lost 27-19. Mahomes didn't have a single turnover. Xavier Woods cooked them. Now, CJ did pretty good, but it was the turnovers that hurt him. So if the Texans are going to find any success, I think they're going to have to overcome this Chiefs defense. That's pretty much going to be the main way they overcome them. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are rooting for the Chiefs to lose, but if the Texans win, I mean, I think that would almost guarantee the Ravens-Bills winner to go to the Super Bowl. So if you're going to see an upset over the Chiefs, I don't think it's here. And I mean, I'm not even a Texans hater, but we have a Texans team who's currently 11-7. They went 10-7 on the year. And we have a Chiefs team, when they're playing all their starters, went 15-1. That only loss was to the Bills. So I'll be interested to see how this game goes. 3:30 Saturday, January 18th. So we'll have to see. But that's my prediction for that game. Chiefs over Texans. I could easily see this being the Chiefs don't actually score 30 points that often. So I'll say it's 24-10 for the Chiefs. Night game on Saturday, Commanders visiting the Lions. I was about to say Eagles for a second. No, the Lions, 15-2. Lions are on the absolute run of a lifetime. It has been a fantastic season for them. And after clinching the division, sadly, over my Vikings, they're back again to take on the Commanders. Commanders coming off the best game of Wild Card Weekend over the Bucks. And this Commanders team, 13-5 on the year, very impressive. And currently right now, they are riding. I mean, what's their win streak at? 6 straight games they have won, but I don't think they get it done here. And I just think there's just something with rookie quarterbacks, pardon me, where they can win a wild card game, some of them, but they just can't get past the superiority of a team like the Lions in the divisional round. And when I just match up these teams, I think Jayden Daniels could rival Jared Goff for being a great quarterback, but Jared Goff has the playoff experience. This Lions team has been here before, and they were in this spot last year, and I just doubt they refuse to choke again. And I think the Lions advance to the conference championship in potentially a blowout. You know, I'd even go as far to say this will be a 40-14 win for the Lions. The way they play football, I mean, this team puts up a lot of points. And I would actually be curious to know what the Lions' lowest total on the season is. I think it's 24. I think 24 points is 20 points. 16, they do 16 February 15th. They scored the lowest points the Lions have scored all year is 16. They've gotten over 50 multiple times. This Lions offense is amazing. When their defense is hot, it's hot. But when it's off, it's off. So if the Commanders can keep scoring, that'll throw this team off. But I don't think so. We're going 40-14, a Lions blowout. Now, Sunday is where we get some fun games. At 2 o'clock, the Rams visit the Eagles. And the Rams, 11-7, winning the NFC West. The Eagles, 15-3, winning the NFC East. This should be a competitive game. should be a competitive game. Both of these teams have made it to the Super Bowl. The Rams have actually won the Super Bowl in the last few years, I should best say. And last year, you know, the Eagles suffered a tough defeat to the Buccaneers this time around, handling the Packers, advancing against the Rams. And the Rams shockingly blew out the Vikings. I mean, just dominated the Vikings on defense, on offense, and they're looking pretty hot. But in terms of matching up these teams 1v1, I easily got to go with the Eagles. I just think when you take Saquon Barkley against the Rams running game, he's going to tear it up. You know, the issue with the Vikings is they fell behind so fast, they never even had a chance to really put the ball on the ground. As for the Eagles, Jalen Hurts doesn't even average over 200 yards a game, and he still is super effective. AJ Brown and Devontae Smith still have tons of success. And I think it was evident in the Rams game that if Sam Darnold would have been on, they would have made the game very competitive. So if Jalen Hurts is in his bag, throwing the ball well, I'm easily going to go with the Eagles. I think it's competitive, though. I'll say 27-20, the Eagles get it done. And that brings us to the final game of the divisional round. Who will play the Chiefs and Texans winner? That is the best game, evidently. It's why it's the last on Sunday. Ravens visit the Bills. I mean, this is going to be fantastic. 14-4 Bills, 13-5 Ravens, both won their divisions. There's just the 2-3 seed. They are so good. Both of these teams are so damn good. And they played each other. They played each other back in September, and Ravens won 35-10, and Lamar Jackson went absolutely crazy in that matchup. He had 3 total touchdowns. He had over 300 total yards. He was fantastic. But the issue, the difference between this Ravens and Bills team is the Bills are the only team that can beat the Chiefs. They're the only team, and they're at home. And they're yet to lose at home all year. The Ravens, you know, when they've struggled, it's been on the road. I'm going with the Bills in a barn burner. I'm seeing 34-30. 34-30, the Bills beat the Ravens. I could even see this going to overtime, okay? This is going to be a phenomenal game, 5:30 Sunday night. I'm pumped. I'm so pumped. Of course, the odds makers, they have this 50-50. I mean, it's impossible to choose who is going to win this. It's, you know, it just depends who's on and who's off. If you can shut down Derrick Henry, if you can shut down Lamar, the Bills will have success. If you can shut down Josh Allen and James Cook, the Ravens will have success. I think it's going to come down to which defense can step up to the level that is expected of them. I'm so pumped. I'm so pumped. This is the one game I'm actually excited for. All the others, I can do it out, but for the Bills and Ravens, count me in. But yeah, those are your brief divisional round predictions. I don't have any fun stats, nothing for you, because none of it matters. At the end of the day, you know, you always see those stats like, oh, this quarterback wins this many games. Oh, a rookie QB never does this. Oh, the Chiefs never do this. And it almost is always the opposite. So we'll leave it all at that, because I am super excited to get into the main event, the final shebang of today's episode. And that is your UFC 311 official predictions. 14 fights again. We have so many fights coming at us over these last few days. I mean, let's just get right on into it, because from the get-go, this card starts with a bang. Kicking off the card is in the men's flyweight division with a matchup between Tagir Ulembekov and Clayton Carpenter. Tagir Ulembekov is the number 11th ranked flyweight in the world. Clayton Carpenter is currently unranked. Tagir is 15-2. Clayton Carpenter 8-0. 5'7-5'6 does give Tagir 1 inch in height. For the reach, he has a 4-inch advantage, 70-66. Southpaw stands for Tagir Ulembekov, orthodox for Clayton Carpenter. The odds makers, -325 for the 11th ranked Tagir, whopping +260 for Clayton Carpenter. Actually, whopping, that's kind of an overstatement. It's not too bad of odds. But the number 11th ranked Tagir Ulembekov, 33 years old, from Dagestan. That's right. He trains with Khabib, that whole camp, Islam Umar. He is one of the Dagestani boys representing the flyweight division. Of his 15 career wins, he has 9 submissions. Both of his losses were by decision. Last time he lost was March 5th, 2022, against Tim Elliott. Since then, he's gone on a 2-fight winning streak, both of those by submission. Tagir's had 2 canceled bouts in 2024, which is why he didn't fight that year. He did win his last fight against Cody Durden in December of 2023, but mind you, that was 1 year and 2 months ago. He also has a total of 8 canceled bouts in the UFC. So with 5 total UFC fights, he's had 8 besides that. 4-1 in the UFC so far. I mean, he's looked pretty stellar. He uses grappling. He gets it done. And, you know, he's been kind of kicking up the notch with these finishes. A guillotine choke of Nate Maniz, rear naked choke of Cody Durden. I'll be interested to see how he does against the young, hungry up-and-comer, the 8-0 Clayton Carpenter. 28 years old from Phoenix. Of those 8 wins, 2 knockouts and 4 submissions. He was actually supposed to have a fight against Steve Ursig in 2023. Pretty ironic. Since then, Steve Ursig went on to fight for a belt. But Clayton Carpenter, 2-0 in the UFC, came off a Dana White's Contender Series. One win in 2023 was a round one finish, and in 2024, he had a round two rear naked chokehold performance bonus over Lucas Rocha. So Clayton Carpenter coming into this one with some momentum. I unfortunately don't think it'll be enough. I think we're pushing him too far up to the top. You know, Clayton, 28, 8-0. He's just been fighting these, you know, other young, hungry guys, not really on anyone's level. Tagir, this is a 17-fight veteran. This is a guy who was taken on some tough competition in his last fight out against Cody Durden. So I'm going to go with Tagir Limbekov, probably a grappling win, if I'm going to be honest. But if he does catch Clayton Carpenter's neck, I would not be surprised if he was able to nail a submission. So we're going to go with Tagir Limbekov. I think no matter the way of victory, I just think this is too much of a step up for Clayton Carpenter. But if he pulls off the upset, I mean, good for him. He'd be ranked number 11 in the world. Crazy stuff. Moving up to the men's bantamweight division for our next matchup, we have Ricky Tercios taking on Bernardo Lion King Sopage. Ricky is 13-4. Bernardo is 11-3. 5'9 to 5'6 gives Ricky 3 inches in height. He also has 5 inches in reach, 71 to 66. Both men are in the orthodox fighting position. Ricky Tercios is the plus 270 underdog. The favorite is Bernardo at minus 355. Let's start with Ricky, 31 years old from Texas. Of his 13 wins, he has 4 finishes, 3 knockouts, and 1 submission. Of his 4 losses, he's been finished in half of them, once by submission and another time by knockout. These two were originally supposed to fight at UFC 309, but that fight fell apart. Instead, they'll be taking on each other at UFC 311. Ricky, you know, win-loss, since winning the Ultimate Fighter back in 2021. I mean, he's never really amounted to much. And last time out against Raul Rosas Jr., so brutal. Such a brutal loss. You know, he was getting angry at Raul for his pre-fight antics and mid-fight antics, and he flipped him off when Raul went to touch his gloves for the start of round two. Raul would proceed to take him down and submit him in a very handsome fashion. So kind of making Ricky look like a fool there. Tercios has a very boring style, if I'm being honest. It's a very weird, I don't even know, he grapples, he lands some strikes. I don't know. I'm probably not going to pick with him because we have Bernardo Sopage here. Bernardo, 24 years old from Albania, but now actually trains and lives in Sweden. Of his 11 victories, 10 finishes, 7 knockouts, and 3 subs. And, you know, he's had 3 straight canceled fights, so it's been tough for Bernardo to get a fight. He fought in March of 2024. We had a fight of the night against Vinicius Oliveira. Of course, Vinicius hit him with one of the nastiest flying knee knockouts I've seen in my entire life. But Bernardo was an absolute dog in that fight, and it was pretty even. Heading into the final round, I think Bernardo brings this young, hungry energy. And unlike the Clayton Carpenter Tagir Limbekov fight, Ricky Tercios is no Tagir Limbekov. Ricky Tercios is no ranked opponent, okay? This one is going to Bernardo Sopage. I could see a submission. I could see a knockout. I just see violence coming our way. Give me Bernardo Sopage all day. Sticking with the bantamweights, we head to Rinya Hybrid Nakamura taking on Muin Tajik Gafurev. Rinya, 9-0, undefeated. Muin, 19-6, 25-fight veteran. Both men have a 68-inch reach advantage. Both men stand 5'7". The only difference, southpaw for Rinya, orthodox for Muin Gafurev. Rinya, major favorite here, minus 500. Muin is at plus 375. So if you want to make some money, I mean, bet on Muin, because Rinya is not going to give you much money. Rinya Nakamura, the minus 500 favorite, 29 years old from Japan. One of this wave of Japanese fighters that are coming over and really just making an impact. 5 knockouts and 1 submission make up those 9 career victories. And I'll say the one thing that is troubling me is on the road to the UFC and in his debut, all round one knockouts, looking fantastic. Since joining the UFC, you know, taking on clearly lesser competition in Fern Garcia and Carlos Vera, he just never really was searching for the finish. You know, and I think Rinya really needs to get a finish in this fight. He's clearly capable. I mean, knocking out Toshima Kazama to, you know, basically earn a UFC contract. He knocked him out in 33 seconds. Then takes on Fern Garcia, and I think the Fern Garcia and Carlos Vera fights both speak to how tough they are. But also, Rinya dominated those fights. The Fern Garcia fight, 9.5 minutes of control time out of a 15-minute fight. The Carlos Vera won 13 minutes of control time out of a 15-minute fight. Rinya Nakamura has been so dominant since he joined. I'm really hoping he can get a finish here. Now, obviously, it won't come easy as he takes on Muin Gafurev. The +375 underdog is 28 years old from Tajikistan, but now trains in Las Vegas. Of those 19 career wins, he has 17 finishes, 10 knockouts, and 7 subs. He's only ever been finished once, which was his last loss in October of 2023 when Saeed Nurmagomedov submitted him in a minute and 13 seconds. I'll say, you know, Gawin, you know, lost on the Contender Series in 2021. Took 22-22 off from the UFC, came in 2023, drops a decision to John Castaneda, of course the Saeed loss, but he fought in June of this past year, picked up a win over Kang Ho Kang, and showed his striking capabilities in that fight. So Nguyen is clearly veteraned in terms of 25 career fights, but I think Rinya is going to do a similar thing that he's done to the past two guys, grapple them to death. I just hope he can actually lock in a submission. I don't know if I'm going to actually predict that to happen, but I do think no matter which way this fight goes, Rinya Nakamura is going to be dominant, and he's fun. He's fun, he's feisty, and he's got an intimidating look. That kid is hungry for a win. Jumping up to the women's bantamweight division, we head to some ranked women as the number 13th ranked Aileen Perez takes on the number 9 ranked Carol Rosa. Ooh, Aileen Fiona Perez, that's her nickname. Carol, 18-6, Perez 11-2. Both women are 5-5. The reach advantage is 1 inch for Carol, 67-66. Switch stance for Aileen, orthodox for Carol Rosa. Let's start with Carol, the number 9 ranked woman's bantamweight. Carol last fought in August of 2024 in her lone appearance, picked up a decision win over Pan Kianziad. The 30-year-old is from Brazil, and out of her career 18 victories, she has 6 finishes, 4 knockouts, and 2 subs. Of her 6 losses, she's been submitted twice. So far in the UFC, yet to be submitted. You know, she's had a decent UFC run. Was it 7 wins, 3 losses? Last time she lost a fight of the night against Irene Aldana in December of 2023. That fight was actually fantastic. That was a great fight. The other one before that, a fight against Norma Dumont, which I think a lot of people thought she won. Carol Rosa is very talented, very gritty, and is clearly up to the par in the women's bantamweight division. But she takes on the 30-year-old as well. This one, the +210 underdog, Aileen Perez. Now, Aileen, 11-2 from Argentina, but now trains in Florida. 6 finishes in her 11 career wins, 4 knockouts, 2 subs. Currently on a 4-fight winning streak, 2-0 in 2023 and 2-0 in 2024. Most recently submitted Daria Zelenikova in September with a round 1 arm triangle. Aileen Perez amping up the finishing abilities there. Of her 4 UFC wins, and if you even want to include her loss into this, she has over 20 takedowns. Okay, so she is a gritty grappler. She was our prediction for having the biggest rise in the women's bantamweight division because really there was no one to pick from. And Carol Rosa, unfortunately, I think will prove a tough challenge, but I can see Aileen breaking through her takedown defense, getting takedowns, maybe locking in a submission. I gotta ride with Aileen Perez because I can't contradict myself on, oh, I think she's gonna have the biggest rise. Oh, I predict she's gonna lose the first fight she has of the year. No, we're not going with that. We're going Aileen Perez, a round 2 submission of Carol Rosa to kind of catch everyone off guard. Following that, this card builds on itself, guys. This card builds up from pretty good to the fantastic in the main event. But here we go, middleweight division, as Zachary Savage Reese takes on Azamat Iron Bekov. Oh, this is going to be good. Violence, let me tell you, Zachary Reese, 8-1, Azamat 18-3. 6'4 to 6 foot gives Reese 4 inches in height. He also has 5 inches in reach, 77-72. Switch stance for Reese, orthodox for Azamat Bekoyev. Azamat -230. Zach Reese +175. Very interesting. Zachary Reese is now a 3-fight UFC veteran. Weird to say. 30 years old from Texas. Of his career 8 wins, he has 7 finishes. Of those wins, 5 by knockout, 2 by sub. He was actually supposed to fight Cedric Dumas, in which would have been a satisfying fight to watch Reese win. But unfortunately, Cedric pulled out, so in steps Azamat Bekov. Reese, last time out against Jose Daniel Medina, couldn't get the finish. And what was just plainly just mind-boggling, I mean, here's a guy, gets an armbar in the Daniel's Contender Series, gets slammed finished in his debut, gets a 20-second knockout against Julian Marquez, and then clearly against a lesser competition in Jose Daniel Medina, just couldn't get the finish. 5 takedowns of 9 attempts, 6 minutes of control time. Reese really should have finished him there. And I hope it's not a sign of the decline, but we'll have to see, because he takes on a true veteran of MMA in general, making his UFC debut. Azamat Bekov, the minus 230 favorite, is 29 years old from Russia and is currently on a 6-fight winning streak. Of his 18 wins, he has 14 finishes. 6 by knockout, 8 by sub. He's only ever been finished once in his entire career, so I'll be curious to see how he does in this one. I'm really torn, guys. I'm really torn, because one part of me is like, we got this Azamat Bekov guy. Okay, he's intimidating. Iron is his nickname. Size-wise, he matches up with Reese. And I'd say a majority of things. You know, obviously a bit of height and reach go to Reese. But, I mean, this guy is a veteran of the game, riding a win streak. I saw a bit of a decline in Zachary's last time out here. But, you know, it's just something about Zachary Reese. We share the same first name. I think that's what it is. And he comes out with such violence, such intensity. I don't know if Azamat's going to crack under the pressure of the bright lights, but I got to stick with Zach Reese. We got to stick with this UFC boy in Zach Reese. Azamat may be a killer, but I'm yet to see anything from him. So we're going to keep our prediction of Zach Reese, which, I mean, I had just been keeping that in my head, but now you all know. Following that, we head to the men's lightweight division, and we get another good one here at lightweight as Grant Dawson takes on Diego Ferreira, two guys that have floated in and out of the men's lightweight rankings. Grant, KJD Dawson, 22-2-1. Diego Ferreira, 19-5. 5'10 to 5'9 gives Grant 1 inch in height. Diego does have the reach with 2 inches, which stands for Grant Orthodox for Diego Ferreira. Grant is the minus 270 favorite. Diego at plus 215 is the underdog. Grant Dawson, ladies and gentlemen, 30 years old from Nebraska, but now trains and lives in Florida. Of his 22 wins, 5 knockouts and 13 subs. 18 of his 22 wins by finish. Love to see that. Of his 2 losses, he's been knocked out in both of them. Came into the UFC on an incredible run. I mean, it was a fantastic run. He was on a 19-fight unbeaten streak. Then, in his first main event, takes on Bobby Green, gets knocked out in 33 seconds. Just so embarrassing. Since then, he's followed up with a win over Joe Selecki and a round 2 TKO of Hoffa Garcia in 2024. So a good year after a sad end to 2023 for Grant Dawson. He's a grappler, man. He is a grappler through and through, American chain grappler. He is just, that's what he does. That is his specialty. And he hunts for the finish, a little TKO, a little submission. I mean, I'm here for it, Grant. His opponent, Diego Ferreira, though, is an absolute warrior. 39, getting up there in age, from Brazil. Of his 19 wins, 12 finishes, 5 by knockout, 7 by sub. Of his 5 losses, he's been TKO'd 3 times. Diego Ferreira, been with the UFC for a fat minute. How about since 2014? This is year 11 for Diego Ferreira. And I mean, he's taking on Benil Dariush, Dustin Poirier, Gregor Giuseppe, Matheus Cameron. All 5 of his losses are to legit competition. And since taking a 2-year hiatus, he came back in May of 2023, a nasty knockout of Michael Johnson. His lone appearance in 2024, a comeback win against Matheus Rebeque with 9 seconds left, was able to get the decision, the TKO victory. So Diego Ferreira is a tough, tough competitor. I just wonder if Grant Dawson's going to be able to get the better of him, because as I've seen in the last 3 fights Diego Ferreira has lost, he was out-grappled. Okay, the last 2 he won, it was when he was able to use the striking. So if Grant Dawson is able to get his takedowns, he's going to chain wrestle Diego Ferreira to death. If Diego knocks him out, that's going to be what happens there. So we are going to go with Grant Dawson. We're riding with the wrestlers tonight. But Diego Ferreira, 39, don't sleep on him. There's something in those fists of Diego Ferreira. I swear, he hits so hard at times. And I mean, what he did to Matheus Rebeque's face just is brutal. Oh my gosh, he beat it up to a pulp. This should be an exciting fight on the prelims. Keeping them rolling, light heavyweight action as the number 13th ranked Bogdan Guskov welcomes the new debuting Billy Elikana. Bogdan was supposed to take on the number 10 ranked Johnny Walker, but Johnny decided to pull out, so in steps Billy Elikana. Bogdan Sarovich Guskov, coming into this one, is minus 330 as the favorite. Billy, son of Susie Alicana, is the plus 245 underdog. 16-3 for Bogdan, 7-1 for Billy Alicana. Both men are 6'3". 1 inch in reach for Alicana, 77 inches to 76. Southpaw for Billy Alicana, orthodox for Bogdan Aguska. Bogdan has had an interesting run so far in the UFC. You know, 32 years old from Uzbekistan, 14 knockouts of his 16 wins. Of his 3 losses, he's been submitted twice. That appears to be his weakness. Like I said, supposed to fight Johnny Walker. Here's a guy who debuts against Volkan Ozdemir, gets ran through in round one, follows it up, round one knockout of Zach Pelga, follows it up in April of last year with a round two knockout of Ryan Spann. So, I mean, this guy, he hits hard. He clearly wasn't ready for Volkan Ozdemir, but anyone below him has proven to be of lesser competition. I see a similar fate for Billy Alicana. Billy is 7-1 professionally, 29 years old from Las Vegas, 4 finishes, 3 knockouts and 1 sub of those 7 wins. He has he's currently on a 3-fight win streak, and unfortunately, I just see Billy getting knocked out right away in round number one. I mean, I don't know anything about this Billy Alicana guy. Nothing from the Contender Series. He's on a win streak. He's being thrown in against a guy in Bogdan Guskov, who we know hits hard. We know he hits damn hard. And what I've seen is that if he's in his bag, if he's prepared, he can perform at a high level. So we're going to ride with Bogdan Guskov for a little round one knockout. This should be very exciting. And he is Anthony Smith's twin. If you haven't seen Anthony Smith, he is Anthony Smith's tattooless twin. Not actually that, just a meme kind of thing. Heading to our next one, we get a heavyweight fight between the number 6 ranked Halton Almeida and the number 7th ranked Sergey Spivak. Halton Maldonado Almeida, 21-3, Sergey Polar Bear Spivak, 17-4. Both men are 6'3", 79 inches in reach to 78 inches in reach, with 1 inch for Halton Almeida. Both men same. In the orthodox stance, is a pretty even affair, except when we get to the odds, minus 450 for Halton Almeida, plus 340 for Sergey Spivak. Oh my goodness. Halton Almeida, 33 years old, from Brazil. Of those 21 wins, how about 20 finishes, 7 knockouts, 13 subs. Of his 3 losses, he's been TKO'd twice. Halton Almeida had his win streak snapped last March when Curtis Blaydes TKO'd him. That is, of course, a hilarious, hilarious fight, as Halton Almeida set the takedown record for a single round in round one over the previous leader and then gets TKO'd 36 seconds into round number two. Pretty funny. Followed it up with a fairly simple win over Alexander Romanov in June, and now he's back in action. Ranked number 6, looking to get a top 5 opponent next. Halton Almeida, he's fighting about everyone that you can, you know? He's fought in Curtis Blaydes. Has he fought Marcin Tybura? He fought Jarzynka Rozenstruik. He fought Derek Lewis. He's fought a lot of these guys that have already been in the UFC, so I'll be curious to see how he performs in this one against fellow grappler Sergey Spivak. Sergey, the plus 340 underdog, 29 years old from Moldova. Of his 17 career wins, he has 15 by finish, 7 knockouts, 8 subs. Of his 4 losses, he's been knocked out 3 times, and it's become apparent if you're going to beat Sergey, you're going to catch him, okay? And his loss against Walt Harris in 2019, TKO'd with knees in 50 seconds. His loss against Tom Aspinall, it's Tom Aspinall, 230, gets hit with an elbow into the fight. Last loss against Ciryl Gane, ran through. He didn't even throw anything or attempt a takedown. It was brutal. Last time he fought, though, August 2024 in a main event, he submitted Marcin Tybura with an armbar. I just don't see that happening this time around. Sergey Spivak is a great grappler. Halton Almeida is just better, and these two guys are not going to strike. They're just going to grapple, and Halton, doing exactly what he's going to do with Romanov, go across the ring, shoot for a takedown. Even if Spivak defends it, he's going to be able to get him back down again, get into position, whether it's a TKO from ground and pound, which I think is most likely going to be a submission in my opinion. I got Halton Almeida winning all day. Plus, he's a minus 450 favorite. I mean, are you kidding me? That's utterly ridiculous. But we'll get to the biggest favorite of the night right here, as Peyton Talbot, probably one of the biggest prospects in the UFC, as he takes on the veteran Ryony Barcelos. Peyton Talbot, 9-0. Ryony, 18-5. 5'10 to 5'7 gives Peyton 3 inches in height. He also has 3 inches in reach, 70 inches to 67. Switch stance for Peyton, orthodox for Ryony Barcelos. Peyton, of course, my prediction for biggest rise in the men's bantamweight division, as he gets his toughest opponent to date, and he's already ranked minus one, or the odds for him, minus 1,400 favorite, Ryony Barcelos, plus 775 underdog. Crazy. Crazy. If you're going to bet any money, bet Ryony Barcelos here. This is where you make your money. This is absolutely crazy, if you ask me. Peyton Talbot, 26 years old, from Nevada, 8 finishes of his 9 wins, and I mean, they've gotten better with every single win. Coming off a Dan White's Contreras series where he didn't get a finish, he gets a round 3 comeback win over Nick Aguirre. Nick Aguirre wins round 1, round 2, and gets submitted 58 seconds in round 3. Against Cameron Sayman, embarrasses him, knocks him out in round number 2. And then Yasuke Mori, a 19-second knockout bat in June. I mean, Peyton Talbot has been perfect thus far. He's already built a following on social media. This kid has all the signs of a star. This is just another stepping stool in his career. His opponent, the 37-year-old Rayone Barcelos from Brazil. Of his 18 wins, 11 finishes, 8 by knockout, 3 by sub. Of his 5 losses, he's been finished twice. Now, one of those by knockout, one of those by submission. Rayone, been with the UFC now for 7 years. He's picked up some okay wins here and there. Beat Chris Gutierrez, beat Saeed Nurmagomedov. Last time out, he fought in February, submitted Christian Quiñones. But, I mean, he's also been knocked up by Umar Nurmagomedov. Dropped decisions to Victor Henry and Kyler Phillips. It's tough for me. It's tough for me to even think Rayone can win this. I think Peyton runs through him like every other. But, you know, Peyton's so young. He is a whole decade younger. If you're going to see any upset tonight, it would probably be here. And, I mean, plus 70-75, winning would be utterly insane. We're obviously picking Peyton. I mean, honestly, I think he'd get a round 1 knockout, in my opinion. But Rayone Barcelos is as tough as they come. Peyton, I just think, is younger. He's more experienced. His chin hasn't taken as much damage. And he's going to capitalize on that. And, you know, whether it's on the ground, whether it's on the feet. And clearly, Peyton likes to be on the feet more. He's going to beat Rayone Barcelos. But that is your prelim predictions. Tagir Limbekov, Bernardo Sopage, Rinya Nakamura, Aileen Perez, Zachary Reese, Grant Dawson, Bogdan Guskov, Holton Almeida, and Peyton Talbot. I think we're going to see a lot of finishes on these prelims, but I also think you're going to see a lot of grappling, if I'm going to be honest. And as we get into the main card, just be prepared for a lot more grappling. But we kick things off in the men's middleweight division as, oh no, he's no longer ranked. Kevin Holland takes on Reiner De Ridder, and unfortunately, Kevin is no longer ranked. Sad to see. Kevin Trailblazer Holland takes on Reiner RDR De Ridder, a former ONE double champion. Very fun fact, ONE Championship, the major promotion in Asia. Reiner De Ridder was a double champion over there. Reiner is a minus 115 favorite, but Kevin Holland is also the minus 105 favorite. The odds makers, they can't pick a favorite in this one. Kevin, the Trailblazer, 26-12 with 1-0 contest. Reiner, 18-2. 6'4 to 6'3 gives De Ridder 1 inch in height, but the reach advantage goes to Kevin with 3 inches, 81 to 78. Orthodox for Holland, southpaw for Reiner De Ridder. Let's start with Kevin. Coming in this one of the most entertaining fighters on the roster, 32 years old from Texas, 21 finishes of his 26 career wins, 13 by knockout, 9 by sub. Of his 12 losses, he has been finished 5 times, and he's not in the best streak, you know, 1-3 in his last 4. To be fair, I thought he beat Jack Del Maddalena when they fought in 2023. The Michael Page loss, that was embarrassing. His armbar, Michael Oka, J-Sec in June, phenomenal. In October, the Roman Dolidze fight, I mean, I don't know what was going on there. Kevin, like, I don't know if he, people are saying he faked an injury, but something went wrong. He couldn't continue. He was already getting dominated in round 1. I don't know what happened there, but Kevin, back in action. It's been apparent he has more success at welterweight than middleweight. Nonetheless, he'll try his luck at middleweight again as he takes on, of course, Reiner De Ridder. 34 years old from the Netherlands. He has 16 finishes of his 18 wins with only 3 knockouts. He has 13 subs. Both of his losses came against this guy named Anatoly in ONE Championship. So he's only ever lost to one guy before, TKO'd in both of them. His debut against Gerald Meerschaert was one of the sloppiest wins that I've seen in a long time, but at the same time, it was so perfect. Almost knocks him out at the end of round number 1, comes back in round number 2, Gerald fights his way back to win it. Round 3, neither man can barely breathe. Raider gets a takedown, submits him. This is what's troubling to me about this, is am I going to get a world beater in Reiner De Ridder, or am I going to get some guy taking on Kevin Holland, and Kevin takes advantage of him? I'm just going to do an observation here. I'm just going to say, Kevin's obviously going to have a lot more success on the feet than De Ridder. But mind you, De Ridder hits hard. De Ridder hits hard, so Kevin's got to be careful. But I think the feet is going to be where he succeeds the most. In terms of grappling, you know, I saw him struggle. You know, Michael Kajacek managed to get on top, but then Kevin whipped up an armbar. I don't see that happening to De Ridder. Dolidze beat Holland with the grappling. Michael Venom Page beat him with the striking. Jack Del Maddalena, that was a striking affair. We all know, you know, the Khamzat fight. I don't really look at that. Wonderboy outstruck him. It's impossible to tell with Kevin Holland what's going to happen. but this is just so even. You know, I understand the odds makers being like this. A part of me wants to pick Kevin Holland. It really does. And I'm just trying to picture the setting. I'm really trying to visualize it here as, you know, they're both in the octagon. The crowd's going crazy. It's the first fight on the main card, the first pay-per-view of 2024 in the Intuit Dome in LA, California. And I just can't give you a read. I can't give you a read if I'm being honest. I'm probably just going to go with Ryan or Day Ritter because I always hope Kevin Holland wins. So it'd kind of be a win-win if, you know, I pick Kevin Holland and he loses, I'd be sad. But if I pick Rayner, then I get it right. And then if Kevin Holland wins, then I'll be happy. So that's what we're going to go with. I just think if it goes to the ground, Rayner's going to have some success. And, you know, the Jared Meerschaert fight, your first UFC fight is rarely perfect. Okay, if I'm being honest. And this is just going to be what version of these fighters that we get showing up. So we're going to go with Reiner. I'm going to say he gets a submission, but at the end of the day, anything can happen. And Kevin Holland is as tough as they come. Let's jump to the lightweight division as the number 10 ranked Renato Moicano takes on the number 9 ranked Beneil Dariush. This one's going to be action packed. Plus 145 is Beneil. Minus 175 is Renato. 22-6-1 for Beneil Dariush. 25-1 for Renato Moicano. 5'11 to 5'10 gives Renato 1 inch in height, and they both have a reach of 72 inches. Southpaw with that left for Beneil, orthodox with the right for Renato Moicano. Oddly enough, you know, weird spot, they're both 35, yet at such different stages of their career. Beneil Dariush, 35 years old, born in Iran, been in California for a long time now. 13 finishes out of his 22 career wins. He has 5 knockouts and 8 subs. Of his 6 losses, he's been knocked out in 5 of them. Wow, just unfortunate. Beneil at one point was on an incredible win streak with, I think he was up to 7 straight wins. It was utterly incredible. This is a guy that's been with the UFC since 2014. Unfortunately, he got a title eliminator against Charles Oliveira, knocked out in round 1. Comes back in December 2023, knocked out in a minute by Arman Tsarukyan. So the context there is that, you know, our last lightweight champion for Islam Makhachev, the current title challenger Arman Tsarukyan, those are the guys that Beneil Dariush has lost to. But mind you, he's beaten Matheus Gamrot, beaten Tony Ferguson, beaten Diego Ferreira, beaten Shakur Close, beaten Drew Dober. He's beaten some tough SOBs, and he's coming in against a tough guy now, Moicano. It's just weird that Dariush is on the tail end of his career, despite being the same age as his opponent, and not a Moicano. Moicano, 35 years of age as well, as we mentioned, from Brazil, now trains in Florida. 2 knockouts and 10 subs make up his 20 career victories. Of his 5 losses, he's been finished 4 times, but he's on a 4-fight win streak. He's 6-1 in his last 7. He has been, he's in the prime. In the prime of his career, 3-0 2024, doesn't get much better than that. Beats Drew Dober, TKOs Jalen Turner, and then demolishes Benoit Saint-Denis in front of his home crowd. I mean, a win at UFC 300 and a win at UFC Paris, Moicano's an absolute legend. Similar to Beneil Dariush, he's been with the UFC since 2014. Not as many fights in the UFC as Beneil Dariush, but this is a guy who's fought in Chan Sung Jung, Jose Aldo, he's beaten Calvin Kattar, beaten Cub Swanson, he's fought in Brian Ortega, he's fought in Rafael Dos Anjos, for goodness sakes, on a couple days' notice. Moicano is as tough as they come. I'm very confident in his abilities, and I think he not only beats Beneil Dariush, I think he picks up a nice finish in this one. Moicano is in such an awkward spot, I'll say, especially if he wins this, is because every person he beats just seems to be one spot ahead of him. I mean, when he was ranked number 13, he beat the 14th ranked Jalen Turner. Then he then fought the number 12 ranked Benoit Saint-Denis. He passed him. He's now at number 10, fighting the number 9 guy. Moicano could easily be fighting a top 5 guy, but he just keeps fighting people one rung above him. So I think if he beats a guy, Beneil Dariush, I mean, look what it's done for Armin and Charles Oliveira. Done wonders for their career. I'll be very excited to see this fight take place. And you know, Moicano, on the ground is where he's going to want to work, but he uses the striking and the submission threat on the ground. So he's very diverse on the ground. The feet, I think this is where Beneil could potentially catch him. That deadly spin and back fist, we know it's there, Beneil. We know it's there. Third fight on the main card, and guys, this could be the main event. I freaking love this. The number 2 and 3 light heavyweight fighters in the world, both former champions, Jiří Procházka and Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill. Minus 105 for Jiří, minus 120 for Hill. I mean, this is 50-50 as it gets. Jiří 35-1, Jamal Hill 12-2 with one no contest. 6'4 to 6'3 gives Hill 1 inch in height, 1 inch in reach goes to Jiří, 80-79. Southpaw with that left for Hill, orthodox with the right for Jiří Procházka. Let's start with the man from the Czech Republic, the 32-year-old Jiří Procházka. 29 finishes out of 30 career wins, make it 26 by knockout, 3 by submission. All 5 of his losses have came by finish, and 4 of them have came by knockout. But I do want to add that Jiří hadn't been knocked out in a long time before he came to the UFC. Of course, his debut against Volkan Ozdemir, a fantastic knockout. The spinning back elbow of Dominic Reyes, one of the craziest live knockouts I've ever seen. That fight against Glover Teixeira, I think currently is my favorite light heavyweight fight of all time. You know, I obviously wasn't there. I joined in 2020. I joined in 2019. That fight still is my favorite light heavyweight fight I've seen thus far. Alex Pereira the first time around, much better than the second fight around. We already know he's not completely washed because of what he did to Alexander Rakic in 2024. I just think with Jiří is he ran into a guy in Alex Pereira. You know, Alex Pereira was his Volkanovski to Max Holloway, is what Islam was to Volkanovski. It's what, I'm trying to think of other fighters, it's what, gosh, there's some out there. It's Daniel Cormier's John Jones. You know, it's Stipe. It's to Daniel Cormier. I don't even know. What I'm saying is Alex Pereira is Jiří's kryptonite. And other than that, he's gotten performance bonuses, fight of the nights against everyone else he's fought, and I don't see that changing here as he takes on Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill. Now, Jamal, 33 years old from Michigan, 7 knockouts of those 12 wins. Both of his losses did come by TKO. Actually had 2 fights lined up in 2024 after losing to Alex Pereira in the main event of UFC 300 against Khalil Roundtree Jr. and Carlos Hulberg, but he unfortunately had to pull out. Now, Jamal Hill quickly went from a beloved fighter. I mean, here's a guy knocking out Jai Walker, beating Thiago Santos in a main event, beating Glover Teixeira, retiring Glover Teixeira. And then something happened after he vacated the belt. I don't know what happened. He, of course, had to vacate the belt in 2023. Comes back, main event of UFC 300. Alex Pereira knocks him out, and he goes full villain. Turns on his fans, turns on the UFC, is just rude, takes no accountability for his losses. I mean, one of the most perplexing things I did not see coming in the arc of Jamal Hill's career, and honestly, I'm not riding with him. Absolutely not, you know. It's been 2 years since he last got a win. It's almost been a year since he last fought. So it's going to be interesting to see how Jamal Hill looks. In terms of Jiří Procházka, we already know what to expect. He gets beat up in round one, makes it to round two, he either lives or dies. We lost round one against Volkan Ozdemir. Dominic Reyes, it was pretty 50-50. Glover Teixeira, I mean, he was losing that fight until round five. Alex Pereira, it was 50-50 round one. Obviously got TKO'd in round two. Rakic lost round one, TKO's him in round two. And of course, against Pereira the second time around, it was just evident that Procházka had no game plan and was going to get knocked out. So I want to go round one for Jiří here, but the statistics say round two. Either way, Jiří Procházka by knockout. Jamal Hill, I'm not a fan of you. I'm not. You've made it easy to not be a fan of you. Let me add that as well, is that he's made it super simple for you to hate him in the UFC. So Jiří Procházka all day. Fantastic. Heading into our co-main event, ladies and gentlemen. What a treat. What a treat as we head to the men's bantamweight division as the champion, Mirab Dovizioso, the number 7th ranked pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, takes on the number 2 ranked Umar Nurmagomedov. The machine, Mirab Dovizioso, 18-4 on an 11-fight winning streak, takes on the 18-0 Umar Nurmagomedov. I mean, this is crazy. This is crazy. 5'8" to 5'6". Umar has a 2-inch height advantage. He also has an inch reach advantage. 69-68. Orthodox stance for both of these men. This is as even as it gets. Now, Umar, as the challenger, -355. Mirab, the champion, +250. So the odds makers leaning towards Umar for this fight. Let's talk about the champion, Mirab Dovizioso, 34 years old from Georgia. Of those 18 wins, he's only had 4 finishes, 3 knockouts, 1 sub. Been with the UFC since 2017. He is a grappling machine. He, of course, holds the record for most takedowns attempted in a fight at 49, wasn't it? Was that 49? I think it was. Yeah, 11 of 49. Back in 2023. In 2024, beat Cejudo, and at the Sphere in Las Vegas in September, beat Sean O'Malley. So a quick 4-month turnaround for Mirab. I mean, last time he got finished, 2021 against Marlon Vera, and what was Marlon Moraes, I should better say, my bad, in a crazy comeback win. But his rap sheet's incredible. Sean O'Malley, Henry Cejudo, Piotr Jan, Jose Aldo, Marlon Moraes. I mean, those are title challenger. One of the greatest featherweight champions of all time, bantamweight title challenger, Piotr Jan, former champion, Henry Cejudo, former double champion, and Sean O'Malley, former champion. Mirab has created a staple for himself in the UFC. I'll say the one thing that is losing fans is his fight style. You know, As we look through his career, I mean, you can pretty much garner that almost all of his fights are grappling. And it's just not that entertaining. You know, the Henry Cejudo one wasn't that bad, but that's because 298 had a lot of momentum rolling through it. The Pierre Dion one, I mean, you know, in hindsight, you can be like, oh my gosh, he attempted 49 takedowns. That's crazy. It's still grappling the entire time. The Sean O'Malley fight, one of the worst title fights of the year. So boring, just grappling. Sean O'Malley. This one, I think, is going to be interesting. I would compare this to Moshe Vavilov versus Aljamain Sterling, as these two guys, their main game plan is grappling, so it's going to be whoever gets the best of these exchanges, and his opponent, Umar Nurmagomedov, is a master at that. The 29-year-old from Russia has 9 finishes of those 18 wins, 2 knockouts, and 7 submissions. He is currently 6-0 in the UFC with 3 finishes, and he's coming off the biggest win of his career against Corey Sandhagen. And mind you, he's never lost a round in his entire UFC career. And this can just be spoken to. I mean, in his last fight, 2 judges gave him a 49-46 against Corey Sandhagen. But undoubtedly, this was Umar Nurmagomedov the entire way. He never gassed. I know people are saying he gassed. People bring up the gas tank. Obviously, Merab is a fantastic gas tank. But I think Umar can't compete with him, you know? And just these Dagestan fighters, Islam and Khabib, when they get the shot, I mean, Umar's the third in line, okay? He's the next big thing at bantamweight. I don't think he's going to shatter his opportunity. I'm going with Umar Nurmagomedov over Merab Dvalishvili, and I don't even hate Merab that much. I just think that the way Umar trains, the grit he has, Merab ain't going to finish him. Let me tell you that. And if he finishes him, it would have to be a freak knockout, or he passes him out when he has him in a submission. And Merab doesn't even go for finishes, okay? I think Umar grapples him, maybe gets a finish. It's probably going to be rare. I see this going the distance. You could even see a split decision. This should be fairly entertaining. All right, we're going to put our hope that this is an entertaining grappling matchup and not a boring grappling matchup. But at the end of the day, anything can happen. With that, ladies and gentlemen, the co-main event will conclude, and we will head to the main event where the number one pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, the current men's reigning defending lightweight champion, Islam Makhachev, takes on the number one ranked Armin Sarukian, an old rival from the past, you can say. As in Armin Sarukian's debut, he took on Islam Makhachev. Islam minus 400 is the favorite. Armin Ahakalats Tuskazurian Sarukian, my bad. His nickname, Ahakalats, I don't even know if I pronounce it right. Plus 305. He's the underdog. Islam 26-1. He's currently on a 14-fight win streak, which is the third longest win streak in UFC history. Armin 22-3. He's on a little win streak of his own. 5'10 to 5'7. Islam has 3 inches in height. 2 inches in reach, though, go to Armin 72-70. Southpaw with the left for Islam. Orthodox with the right for Armin Sarukian. Islam, man, I mean, we all know it. 33 years old from Russia. The win streak, the finishes, 17 of his 26 wins by finish, 5 knockouts, 12 subs, and he's been fantastic. Fantastic since winning the belt. This is a guy who was shockingly knocked out in 2015. Since then, hasn't missed a beat. These two did fight in 2019, a fight of the night, competitive as it gets, but Islam got the better of him. Since winning the championship, he has defeated Volkanovski twice. He had one of the best fights of 2024 against Dustin Poirier, and now he finds himself fighting a man in Armin Sarukian. And Armin's entire life goal has been to get back and rematch Islam Makhachev. And here he is, 28 years old, from Armenia. 14 finishes of those 22 wins, 9 knockouts, 5 subs. I mean, imagining your debut, you fight Islam Makhachev. Since that fight, he went on a 5-fight win streak with 2 knockouts for taking a fight of the night against Matheus Gamrot, which he did not lose. I stand by that. He beat Matheus Gamrot in that fight. Goes down as a loss. Since then, 4 straight wins, none bigger than his last against Charles Oliveira by split decision. I will add the split decision, but before that, the minute knockout, Benil Dariush speaks to his volumes as a striker. These two men can both grapple, can both strike. This is 50-50. 50-50 as it gets. I will not be surprised by what happens, but what I get the vibe is that Islam Makhachev is reaching that point, like John Jones, where he has just beaten so many guys. He has just been doing the same thing over and over. And against Dustin, he dealt with some real striking adversity, but he also gave some striking adversity. He showed the grappling. If this Armin fight, it's impossible to tell what method is going to win it for these guys. Islam's definitely going to be hunting for a takedown. Armin's probably going to have to work on his takedown defense. His scrambling is absolutely fantastic. He's one of the most flexible UFC fighters in the game. He survived 4 submission attempts from Charles Oliveira. Do you know how hard that is? It's super hard. So I don't see Islam getting the finish on the ground. I could maybe see a head kick knockout, you know, a staple that he hit against Volk. But Armin, he also hits pretty hard. This is probably going to be my prediction for fight of the night, but I am going to go with Islam Makhachev to retain. And if Armin wins, I mean, kudos to him. If Merab retains, kudos to him. But I'm going with the Dagestanis, with Nurmagomedov, Abdul's proteges, Islam and Umar, to win the belts. Dagestan's taking over the UFC. So there you have it. We're going with Ryan Day Ritter. We're going with Anato Moicano. We're going with Chiri. We're going with Umar, and we're ending the night with Islam Makhachev. Those are our predictions for UFC 311. Guys, that's all we got for today's episode. A lot of fun fights. Let me tell you, there's a lot of fun fights on this card. 14 fights again. Kicking off, I think, at 5:30, 5 o'clock on Saturday. I don't know. I'll be watching them all for sure. This is one of the best cards that you're going to see. I mean, since I'd say, you know, probably UFC 300. This has been the best card that you've gotten so far. So, exciting stuff, guys. Let me know who you guys are predicting. Shoot me a message. Do whatever. I still want to grow this podcast. You know, it's fun to do for my own, but I truly feel like it's just something inside me that feels like I look at other people succeeding with what they have, and I know I can put out better quality than them. My knowledge is better. My speaking skills are better. I just don't know how to get this to the masses, so I just need to meet the right people and put myself in the right positions. But as for now, I will sign off. I thank you all so much for listening, and as always, guys, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.